You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk, show number 348. Today is Sunday, August 28th, and my name is Kurt. The roulette wheel of hosts continues tonight as I am actually here alone. Ham and Steve are both out on family vacations this week, so we did want to leave you hanging with some greatest hits show. We've been here for 10 years, and we've never missed one show. So here I am, but I'm lucky enough to actually to be joined tonight with a longtime friend of the show, Chris Domino. Most of you know him as co-host of The Rude Awakening, which is found on the flagship station 680 The Fan, which is, of course, the flagship station of the Braves. That's here in Atlanta. You can also find it at 93.7 FM or at 680thefan.com. And he also, of course, runs the pregame show before each Braves game. So he is one of the great baseball men in the city, and it's always a treat to catch up with him. And I will tell you that I had some audio problems with this recording tonight, so I hope that that's not a total impediment for you listening to the show tonight. There were some audio problems in the recording of the interview on my end, not his end, so I apologize for that. But first, we're going to run through some headlines for this week. The big news from this week, of course, if you can call it that, was the trade of Jeff Francoeur, fan favorite, in a three-team trade between the Braves, the Marlins, and the Rangers. The Marlins pick up Frenchie in their wildcard push to help them compensate for the loss of Giancarlo Stanton, who seems to be hurt every year now. He's out until, at best, the last week of the season. So they brought in Francoeur to play platoon and right. So far, so good. First three games, slashing 500, 600, 500. See if he can keep that pace up. And don't be surprised if he's back in a Braves uniform next year if he decides he still wants to play. So the Rangers got some international pool money from both the Braves and the Marlins. The Braves giving up some pool money, which really they don't need next year because they sort of blew their wad on international signings this year. Probably will not dip too heavily into that market next year. And the Braves, as part of the deal, got a couple of minor league players. Shortstop Dylan Moore from the Rangers and catcher first baseman Matt Foley from the Marlins. Neither of these guys can be found in the top 30 prospects of either team, but of course it adds more offensive depth for the farm system. Moore is 24, still playing in high A ball, which is a little old for high A ball, but he's playing pretty well, slashing 263, 377, 440 with 14 homers and 40 stolen bases overall, including 351, 400, 649 with five homers in just 17 games since his promotion. So we might see him move up again once he gets here, and we'll see how he fares against some of this competition closer to his own age. Foley, meanwhile, has spent the season with the Marlins' rookie-level affiliate in Arizona before recently being bumped up to short-season Class A. The 2015 40th rounder has totaled just 44 plate appearances, batted 257, 386, 257, and caught one of the four runners that have attempted to steal against him. So some more catching depth there for the Braves. More news. Rob Whalen hit an early wall Wednesday, in his start against the Diamondbacks and was subsequently placed on the 15-day DL and effectively shut down for the rest of the season with fatigue in his shoulder. The Braves said they were close to shutting him down anyway, as he has far exceeded his innings count from any other year. He had some nice moments for us this year, so let's hope he comes back strong next year. He ends the season for the Braves with a 1-2 record with a 6.57 ERA. But between Mississippi and Gwinnett this year, he finished with a 7-6 record with a great 2.40 ERA and 112 strikeouts in 120 innings pitched. To correspond that move, the Braves brought back old friend Matt Whistler from Gwinnett. He pitched really great in his first start against Arizona, throwing six innings of no-hit ball and finishing with two hits over eight innings. He looked much more aggressive after his stint in AAA, and you hope that that is exactly what he needed to refocus himself for this level. Go back down, work on some pitches, regain some confidence, as Steve and I talked about last week, get that aggression back, and it appears to work so far. A great first start back from him. On the other end of that spectrum was Aaron Blair's start back in Atlanta. He was recalled to start today against the Giants. did not fare so well, gave up eight hits, and five runs, including three homers in just four innings. The homers continue to plague him. He's posted after posting a 3.31 ERA with no homers allowed in his first three major league starts, Blair is now 0-4 with a 10.33 ERA in his past nine starts, surrendering 55 hits, 44 earned runs, and 11 homers in just 38 and a third innings over that stretch, with 20 walks and 27 strikeouts. So he will actually get another start, at least according to what ESPN is telling me, which I'm sort of shocked by. But he sort of continues to underwhelm for a guy who is considered to be one of the top 60 prospects in all of baseball, and of course one of the pitching jewels in the Braves system. One last positive note was the great start from Folti on Saturday. It was one of the best outings in his two-year career as a Major League starter, limiting the Giants to five hits and one run in seven two-thirds innings with one walk and six strikeouts. It was just the third time in 33 Major League starts that he has pitched as many as seven and two-thirds. And it was also, of course, nice for the Braves to get rid of that ignominious streak that they had not had a starter go past seven innings since July 17th. Of course, they had two do that this week, at least two, Whistler and Folti. On a final note was Teheran's bad start against Arizona. He gave up six earned over six innings pitched, including 11 hits and two homers. That start pushed his ERA back over three for the first time since May and leaves his August ERA at a dismal 7.36. So hopefully he closes out the season on a more positive note and strings together some good starts to close out the 2016 campaign. So up next, we will catch up with our old friend Chris Domino, but first, a quick break.
As always, we are happy to be joined by Chris Domino from 680 The Fan, of course, the flagship station for your Atlanta Braves, and co-host of the Braves pregame show. Chris, thanks for joining us as always. We really appreciate it. So tonight, let's talk about some of the big stories from this season, kind of a long, strange season for the Braves, all the trades, the rebuilding, moving into the new stadium next year. And let's look at some of these, obviously starting with perhaps the worst move that Coppola has made. Hate to start with that one, but the trade for Hector Olivera, which at the time a lot of people panned just for the trade itself, and then it didn't work out with his domestic abuse stuff. Steve, who is one of my co-hosts here, really not happy about the fact that they traded for Kemp and ate that additional money as opposed to just walking away completely from Olivera. So what were your thoughts when this all went through? Were you more in favor of the trade, or were you really thinking that they should just get rid of it and wash their hands of the whole thing?
Well, the trade itself, look, I had no idea if the guy could play or not. Somebody paid him, the Dodgers paid him $60-plus million because they thought they could. I think one of the problems is when you started to realize what he was or what he wasn't. I'm not sure he had a position. Somebody that I trust watched him for three games in a row in the minor leagues, and I'm not telling you that's a large sample size, and it's not why you do or don't sign a guy. But he came back and he told me after 3 days, he said, I'll reserve judgment until I see all three, but watching batting practice as much as everything else, he said, if they think they have a home run hitter, they don't. He's not that. And at $6 million a year is basically what it turned out to be after the Dodgers ate their money. He said, okay, we've got a guy for $6 million if he was standing in the corner of the court. He turned out not to be. At a certain point, that he was not going to play for the Braves. The question, do you just release him, and or do you try to get something for him? The Kemp deal, you know, it's not very good math, but at the end of the day, your $8.5 million is going to hit 25 home runs. If he gets in shape, he should be able to do something like that for the next few years. The same math comes into play. If Matt Kemp is standing on a tree corner, totally free agent, anybody in the world can have him. Is he worth $8.5 million? In today's world, he is. So that's what they ended up doing. I think when you look around and you try to figure out what's going on in baseball now, you're trading contracts every bit as much as you're trading talent. Let the games begin. Everybody's trying to get out of a bad one to try to make it not as bad as it would be. That's what I think happened with Olivera. Now, if the question about, you know, if Steve's upset because they have Matt Kemp now, and either you have to do something with Nick Markakis, you might have to do something with Malik Smith or Ender Inciarte, that's a different equation. Getting rid of Olivera was the plan. It was a lot like B.J. Upton. When you traded Kimbrel in large part for two reasons. You weren't sure you were going to win, don't need a closer who I'm going to start to pay money to, but I wanted to get rid of $42 million. So we've seen this movie before. They're trying to trade what looks to be bad money for a better opportunity at not such bad money. And I think that's part of what this is now. And now it's up to Kemp. You know, you all heard what John Coppola said last week about the 30 pounds. Most times we stop at 20 pounds. He went up to 30. And I think Matt Kemp, with that letter and how much he wants to be here, we're going to find out next February when he goes down to Orlando. Let's see what he looks like at that point to find out if he meant all that stuff.
Were you shocked that Coppola came out and said that stuff? I mean, I don't remember, in my memory, it doesn't seem like a John Schuerholz thing that he would ever do something like that. Were you surprised that Coppola came out and really directly addressed how overweight Matt Kemp was? Or
no, because do you remember what those few days were like? It was, hey, I think the Braves might have told Matt Kemp to lose weight. And then it was, no, they did tell Matt Kemp to lose weight. Then he goes on and he says, like I said, to me, most times you stop at 20 pounds. I need to lose 20. I probably need to lose 30, but I just like 20. It sounds better. 30 is a big number. One thing John Coppola has proved over the last couple of years is he'll speak his mind. You know, I've had a whole bunch of off-the-record conversations with him, and eventually some of that stuff ends up on the record. So I don't think he runs from that. I do think what's kind of interesting, the one thing that got lost in that because of the Kemp part of it was he mentioned Matt Whistler and Aaron Blair and said, you know, we're not going to force-feed these guys anymore. They're in that same interview. And I've heard him say this, we've got to stop force-feeding guys. You will play, you will be up here playing at the major league level when you earn it. I think that part of it was lost because of the fear over, or at least the surprise perhaps to some people, over the 30-pound comment. But there were a couple other things said, and I think there are things that he'd said in the last couple of years to let you know that I don't think he suffers fools, and I don't think he really has much regard for, quite honestly, like your feelings. His job is to win games. You know, he's going to have to stand up and face the facts and the music of what this season has not been. But I also think that what I kind of like is I think you're going to know what you stand with him more than you're not.
Yeah, and watching Aaron Blair today, maybe he's next on the Weight Watchers list for the Braves.
I heard the post game today, and Brian Snicker said he's going to get another start. At least that's the plan now. Now, who knows? They might have a meeting tomorrow or on the plane tonight. They might figure out if that's really true or not. But it's, I think 14 different guys have started, and they're not the only team who's had that this year. I think it's 14 different guys have started a game for them. But at a certain point, I need answers, not questions. That's why the Malik Smith injury hurts. I wanted to see him get a whole bunch of at-bats. I want more answers. Matt Whistler, I thought, made the biggest start of anybody this year for the Atlanta Braves the other night. And I think Fulton Averages might be in the top five last night. By the way, if you're asking me to take $10 out of my pocket and guarantee that they'll do that again or something close to it their next time out, I wouldn't do it. But I want to find out. Whistler, he held his water and then some the other night. And Fulton Averages, you know, we talk about his emotions. I thought he kept him in check and pitched a good game. What the season and the record is, you know, It's not good on any stretch, but I do think those two starts, and I'm not a Pollyanna, but I think those two starts might have been, you know, 1 and 3 and 4 over the course of the season in terms of importance so far this year.
Well, you kind of talked about the outfield. You're obviously going to have four guys, assuming Malik Smith comes back and is ready to go. Any thoughts on who it seems to me the obvious one is Markakis. Although Inciarte might have the most value in a trade, but why would you? He's so young. He's still got so much potential.
And I'm not paying him.
Yeah.
I'm not paying him. You know, this goes back to the talent and contracts. I think there's a big board in every one of these executives' rooms, I think all around baseball, and you have the plan A, B, C, and D, and a lot of it is based upon cost, and a lot of it is based upon what you said, who's got the most value. It's like Julio Teheran, you know. When Julio was going well, you certainly could have gotten a lot for him. And I was an advocate of saying, make sure you take and make every phone call you have to. But at a certain point, he might have become too valuable to actually trade away. His contract might have been better for you than for perhaps anybody else, which is why I think you keep him at that point. I think Enciarte, the fact that you're not going to pay him, becomes a big part of this. And if Markakis continues to hit for the next 5 weeks, I think he's a veteran, no-nonsense, doesn't deal with nonsense type guy, that if a team believes that that's what they need, I do think finally this offseason you'll have a couple of offers for him.
Well, and another thing that Coppola talked about was the obvious need for a catcher, but he also mentioned starting pitching is one
sure
of the
did.
Big needs that they're going to have, which obviously they've built so much around the starting pitching. We've talked about Aaron Blair, Whistler, Folty, Teheran. You know, I mean, it seems like they've got a lot of guys, but I guess the next phase, one, you're not getting production from the guys that you're hoping to in the immediate level, and then beyond that, they're so much younger. There's no way that those guys are like Lucas Sims or Colby Allard or anybody like that are going to be ready to come up. So I don't know that surprising is the word, but I mean, do you think that the Braves are going to be players for big free agent? I don't think there's a lot of really great free agent pitchers that are going to be on the market.
No, there isn't. But look, here's the thing. That was said in that same interview with the Kemp and the Whistler and Blair that we just talked about. And I think he was, again, being honest. They need starting pitching. Because I'm a little over the idea of quantity, how many that you have. I know if you have 10, you hope three of them can pitch for you. I get that, why you build up the quantity. But I need quality. You know, at a certain point, you probably have to go find two things. An established bat, 25, 26 years old, a little bit of control time still left on the contract would be great. Whether that's a catcher, whether that's a third baseman, whether that's packaging up something and finding another outfielder, whatever it might be. But you also need a starting pitcher. And look, Aaron Harang was fine for the time here, a really good dude. Bud Norris wasn't a good pitcher here, and he wasn't a great guy here. And I don't mean that as a slight. I'm just telling you that he wasn't going to help the cause with the younger guys. So he held no value to me. I don't want one of those now. If you're telling me you need starting pitching, don't get the 36-year-old guy who you're hoping to catch lightning in a bottle with. I know that version is cheap, but what that is either going to be is trade bait for you when you go get an arm or a bat that we'll never hear of ever again after you trade him halfway through the season, or it's going to be a guy who washes out as early as the month of April. I'd like to go spend a couple of dollars, whether it's this land development / business / Braves stadium deal that they have going on, or whether it's the sort of sending out all the contracts over the last few years. There should be money. And if there's not money this year, I don't believe there's going to be money at any point. So while the free agency class is not great, and a couple of the guys who signed big money absolutely changed the market and the value of these pitchers and, quite honestly, the everyday players, I think it's time to cut a couple of checks. I don't want to go crazy. You know, there is a cap in baseball. It's a self-imposed cap. But if I make a mistake here, I can't afford the next guy. And look, as a quick aside, and I think this does come into play, this Jason Hayward deal this past offseason is a game changer. It is a game changer. I said this out loud, and I had a couple of agents that I talked to heard me say it, and they agree with me. Whether it's through arbitration or whether it's through free agency, if I'm an agent and my guy has done some stuff that Jason Hayward has never done, and he's worth $184 million, let me tell you what I'm worth. It's really going to be insane going forward as guys try to do the comparison based upon, in my opinion, that singular contract.
Well, and I mean, do you have any sense that, like some of these other needs, do they stick with Adonis for another year, or do they go get a third baseman, or do they wait on Rio Ruiz or somebody? I mean, obviously they need a catcher. Do you think they're going to get Matt Wieters or, somebody like
Ramos.
That? Yeah, Ramos.
Wilson Ramos.
Yeah.
Look, they need a catcher. You know, Tyler Flowers seems to be pretty hard-nosed. Rutgers hard-nosed, but that's not going to do much for you. Third base, I think Garcia is really one of the great teasers that we've seen around here in a while. I think he does just enough where you go, you know, for the money, he's kind of worth it. I don't think you're going to win with him, though. My opinion, I don't think that that's the guy. If I had my outfield better settled and my catcher settled, I can live with Garcia. I could. You know, he's played a little bit better defense at times since he came up. His time in the minor leagues, whether he figured out being in the majors is better than being in the minors, or he's going to stop sulking about the idea that they thought for a minute he was an outfielder. He does just enough where I go, look, for the money, it's okay. But he's not okay if I don't have the other stuff solved. And the other stuff does include starting pitching. I don't think that guy will be the reason you win more baseball games. You know what I mean? Like, I've always thought does the guy help you or hurt you? There's a very limited number of guys that I think just, you go, I don't know what he does. You know, it can happen. You don't have to have a definitive opinion on everybody or everything. I think he falls into that category of, I can't figure out if he's worth it or not. 15 home runs, not paying him a lot of money. You know, the defense will be up and down, I'm sure, over the course of a season, because I don't know if he's a guy that keeps his concentration every day. That's okay. I just don't know if okay is what I want at this point, especially if the other stuff isn't fixed.
Well, let's move on to Dansby Swanson. When they brought him up, did you have any concerns about the timing, given that he had not been playing so great at Double A?
No, I think the slate comes clean once you get up here. I think if you have woes, I think your nervousness and excitement sort of eradicates and takes away what you might have done for the last 20 to 30 days in the minor leagues. I just do. It doesn't mean he can't play at this level. Doesn't mean he will play at this level. I think after you're drafted, it's really interesting. Number one overall certainly changes the whole conversation. But I didn't think the numbers per se in Double A were a reason that you would say, uh-oh, this might not go well.
Do you get the sense that he and Albies are going to be the starting middle infield next year?
Yeah, you know, again, Coppola said something else, and he said this to us on our show in the morning here in Atlanta. He said, we've got to see him now to make sure we know if he's supposed to be the starter, his word, in 17. And that's why you bring a guy up, and it's a little bit of a trial. And I think Albies probably comes up in September. We'll see how much, if that does happen, how much he plays. But I think there's a couple of things, like big picture. And I had a conversation, you know, I get an opportunity to talk, thank goodness, to a bunch of guys when they come into town. And whether it's Dusty Baker or whether it's Clint Hurdle or whether it's some other guys around baseball, I think Mike Trout and Harper and Correa, I think they've sort of made it more difficult to be a 22-year-old guy in today's game, because I think every team is, you know, I ask, I don't want to be envious or jealous, but I look around baseball and I go, well, I want one of those, and I'd like one of those. But I think with the young guys, they're all the 1% of the 1% of the 1%, but those guys take it 1% further. They're such the exception. But I think they've made it difficult for every 22-year-old or 23-year-old who's just going through normal growing pains, because now you look around and you go, well, Mike Trout did it, and Bryce Harper did it, and Carlos Correa's doing it. And I just think it's really not fair, because quite honestly, those guys are going to be better than the guy that you just brought up. And they're better than Dansby Swanson. They're different, and they're better. Swanson's a really different overall number one pick. You know, he's not a corner outfielder. He's not a first baseman or a third baseman. He's not Carlos Correa. I think the thing that he's going to have to fight, and the good news is he's as mature as he is he won't have eye-popping numbers. He won't. He's going to be more solid than he is going to be superstars, and that's okay. If you get a guy who plays 154 games a year, you know, he takes his occasional day off. I don't like what they're doing right now with the days off, but I'll be okay with that. I just know that he's not going to be maybe some of those other guys. I just hope Braves fans kind of realize that this isn't a savior-type player. This is a good, level-headed, going to be around for a while. Give him a little bit of time to figure out what he needs to, and you're going to pencil in his name probably in the two-hole for a bunch of years to come.
Well, I'm just wondering if they are going to accept that. I mean, the billing, the build-up for him has been so big that, you know, we talked a couple of weeks ago about some of the struggles that these big name prospects have had, Aaron Blair, Matt Whistler, whoever it might be, that have kind of come up and kind of fallen back, regressed. And we talked about if Dansby Swanson really was going to, what they would do if he really struggled badly. Would they have the guts to demote him back down to AAA if he really struggled?
I think so. I do think that if next year, if he's the starter or he comes in the spring, look, the reason he's up here now is to sort of get his sea legs under him, and that's okay. I'm not a believer that he should have sat against Scherzer. He should have sat against Greinke. I don't think he should have sat today against Bumgarner. I've always believed that you're either helping a player or hurting a player, and if I can't figure out if you're helping him, I believe you're hurting him. And I think not having him hit against those guys, my opinion, I'm not sure why. You know, it's not like he's not going to walk up to the plate in the second at bat with his helmet on or his bat in his hand. He's not afraid of this. I don't want to start that stuff, and I don't think that helps the young guy. In terms of expectations, did you mention Whistler and Blair?
Yeah.
Were those the two guys? What were the expectations for these guys? Honestly, I'm going to tell you, anybody who thought that those guys looked like guys who were going to come in and be dominant, I don't know what you were watching. One guy's a smart guy, and Whistler, very even-keeled emotionally. There's nothing wow about him. And Aaron Blair, the best thing everybody said about him was he threw strikes. And guess what he doesn't do now? He doesn't throw strikes. And if you think Dansby Swanson's Carlos Correa, you're crazy. If you think he's Chris Bryant, you're crazy. If you think he's one of those guys that you've waited your whole life to see, you're crazy. That doesn't mean he can't play. Doesn't mean he wasn't worth whatever 1, 3, 8, 10, whatever somebody would have picked him at. I think there's a wow factor that you see, and over the course of the time, I think you know who those guys are. He made a couple of plays in the field the other day that made me feel good. Look, that guy can make that play in the hole. That's good. Check that box. How consistently can he do it? We'll find out. Slapping a couple of singles, going the other way. Not trying to do too much. Look, the idea of not trying to do too much shouldn't matter some. But in today's hit the home run and driving 100, if you don't do that, you're not a really good, or you're not a valuable player. That's insane. There's value in a guy who can make the play every day, that can get on base and run a little bit. He's just not going to blow your socks off. He's not going to be a guy who all of a sudden, if he's the face of this franchise because he's a good-looking young local kid who can play, make him that. But don't make him out to be something he's not, because it eventually will bite everybody in the rear end.
Well, I guess the last point on the farm system, I mean, they keep sending out this trope about that the whole thing is how quickly they've rebuilt this farm system, that it's a top three, that it's number one, whatever it might be. But is it a function of the farm system just being so filled with really good players? But it's tough to see where some of these guys, you see them as not that they could be Mike Trout, but even as a really, really, as Chipper Jones, as a really great player. There's a lot of really good players, but it doesn't seem like the Braves, in their great depth in their farm system, that they have any like superstar. And some of these guys are very young, but I mean, is that sort of the sense that we should get from their farm system?
Yeah, I don't know. Do you have a Mookie Betts down there? I don't know. I get nervous when you start to talk about, hey, look at the big picture. We have so much. I got to tell you, I'd rather have some quality than the overall quantity. And quality to me means minor league success and minor league not so much success doesn't dictate what happens to a guy in the major leagues. It's a barometer, no doubt about it. It's how long did it take for you to make jumps? Do you dominate at any level? I look at Corey Seager. Sanchez is as hot as it gets now. It's been a long time since any of us have seen or talked about a guy. And he's in New York, and he's the pressure isn't getting to him. He's obviously thriving historically well. Do I think the Braves have a guy like that I don't know of? I don't think so. Doesn't mean it can't happen. Doesn't mean it won't happen. But I don't think that anybody is being talked about like that. I mean, Ozzie Albies is 19 turning 20 years old. Remember a couple of years ago, who was it? In the Dodger trade, it was... it's going to be the leadoff hitter of the future, Jose Peraza. He was supposed to be the guy.
Right.
I mean, where's he now? He was traded again. He's on his third team in a year and a half, 2 years. So every time I read something about a guy in the minor leagues, I'm skeptical. I'm half a cynic in that regard. But I do know that when you see certain guys, Bregman, a kid down in Houston, struggled, what was he, 1-for-32, 1-for-31, you seen him lately? That guy looks like a player. I hope Dansby Swanson is that. I think Dansby Swanson could be that. Just a good, hard-nosed, but I'm not sure if the home runs are going to be there. If the home run is the barometer, and it seems to be in a lot of ways, then I don't think he's going to be that right now. Maybe he gets a little bit stronger. Maybe he gets a little bit bigger. Maybe you find out that he actually knows how to lay off crap pitches and really hit his. That'll help everybody's numbers. But let's find out. He was not going to turn this team around. They were not going to go from being a team that wins, 38% or 40% of their games to a team that was going to win 50. It just wasn't going to happen.
So do you think that one of the big reasons that they've developed all this talent, they've cultivated all this talent, is so they can trade these pieces? I mean, do you think
that's... Your mouth to God's ear. again, what you'd like to be able to do is you'd like to be able to have young talent that doesn't cost... that where you're trading it for the established bat or the established arm. And it might be a 2-for-1. You might have to trade two of your minor leaguers to go get a 26-year-old bat. Do it. I'm also, look, me personally, if I was running a team, I'm on a sell high mode. There is not a phone call I wouldn't make and not a phone call I wouldn't take for everybody on my team. I'm not sure if there are six untouchable guys in all of baseball, and I mean really untouchable. If it takes two of mine that haven't done anything to one that has, I'm in. I'm in almost all the time on a deal like that, as long as the money works. And I'd like to think that if you have two guys who get hot, a youngish pitcher who's up in the majors throwing well and a guy in the minors that somebody wants, you're trading no money away, so you're going to take on money, but are you in a position to take on money? If you're not in a position to take on money, you're really dealing from a deficit. And I'll say this, I've never really cared who my owner is until I have to. I'm bummed by the fact that Liberty Media hasn't at one point, John Malone or whoever John Malone would send here, hasn't thrown $30 million onto a table and said, let's go for it this year. Let's really go for it this year. That disappoints me. I mean, I'm not crying about it. You can win with a $95 million payroll, $100 million payroll. You can. I've seen it done. But I would have liked to have seen the ownership group for the team that I root for and cover every day go above and beyond, do something that they haven't done. Now, look, they did sign Upton. They signed Ugla to an extension. But when they had to cut bait, they did. My belief is, did you put that money in your pocket or did you put it in that pile over here? And I'm hoping we found out it's a pile that all parties can touch.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see. I mean, I've looked at some stuff when they started building this new stadium, and of course we're going to be getting all the revenue streams. And if, I think that the hope from the fans was that because they were getting all this money that that it was going to go back into the team. But I don't know that that's proven to be true in a lot of cases. I mean, you can look at the Twins. They sort of got the same type of deal, and their payroll has gone down since they've moved into a new stadium. Liberty Media, as you mentioned, has never really seemingly been fully committed to that aspect of team ownership. So I'll be curious to see. This is a big offseason, and we'll be curious to see if
you know what's,
Bill.
Sorry. But what's bad about this offseason is I'm not sure that I want to, you know, I look at those lists, and whether it's Wieters or, you know, Ramos, who's having a career year by tons, I don't want to spend it just to spend it. I'd like to see it, but I don't want it to be tokenism. This is a bad class in a lot of ways to try to figure out how much you're supposed to spend on it. And I'm telling you, whether it was Strasburg's deal at the high end or Samardzija, go to Samardzija's deal. That guy's a sub-500 pitcher. They threw an armored a Brinks truck at that guy. I mean, it was a Brinks truck for a guy who was under 500. Now, it's not my money. Do what you want with yours. But I don't want to get into those types of deals either. Like, I'm nervous about Wieters. I'm nervous about Llama. I'm not telling you I don't want them. I do. But at what price? And at what price am I going to, you know, it's a five-year deal. 2 years from now, am I sitting there going, have I increased my chances to win or have I handcuffed myself? And I'm not sure. Look, that's why they pay those guys a lot of money. But this free agency class is going to be really interesting. Mark Trumbo hit his 40th home run today. 40th. So what do you want to pay him? Because if Jason Hayward got $184 million because he plays defense and runs, what am I supposed to pay a guy who can hit home runs?
Especially on a team that's got like 60 as a team all year long. So,
right.
Well, I guess the one spot we have not talked about is the manager. Mm-hmm. So, obviously the big names, the Maddens, the Bochis, the Franconas, those guys are not available.
Right.
Do you think that the Braves, on top of all this, do you think that they feel like they need to bring a big name in to handle the managerial duties? Do you think Snitker has a chance that he can be the manager next year? What's your thoughts on that position?
So let's do this. I've liked Brian Snitker for a long time, like a lot of other people have. 60 years old, getting your first crack, boy, that is and knowing that you're probably going to get your tail kicked more nights than not, that's a good team guy. That's a good soldier. He's earned the right to have a job in the organization. I like him around young guys because I think his personality is conducive to that. All that being said, do I think he's going to be the manager next year? I don't. Do I think the manager somewhere in this organization right now, whether it's Eddie Perez or Terry Pendleton? I don't know. Look, to me, if you don't tell me on September 1st, and I said I think September 10th at the latest on the air before, if you don't tell me Snitker's the manager there at that point, then he's not going to be the manager because he's had then months to do an interview. He doesn't need an exit interview. He doesn't need an interview. Does Eddie Perez and Terry Pendleton? Sure. I'd like to see them maybe have their moment to get in front and say, this is what I would have done. And they're watching it firsthand, so I would listen to what it is they said. And hopefully it becomes a real interview, not just a pick in their brains moment. But at the end of the day, you're asking, do they need to win the press conference? And that's always a big question. Do you need to win the press conference after a couple of years back-to-back like this? The answer, quite honestly, while nobody wants to say it, is yes. You need to, even though it's a new building, sort of get your fan base to pay attention to what you're doing. I've said for 2 years, not 1, not 6 months, not 3 months. I've been around a whole bunch of guys in 23 years of covering this team and seeing everybody else come in. I'm going to tell you the guys that I knew, and I've said it before, and I said it years ago on air. David Ross, Martin Prado, Mark DeRosa, Eric Kinski. Of all the guys that I've seen, if you would have asked me 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, who do I think is going to manage, those would have been the top four guys that I've given you. And I'm going to go to DeRosa. 2 years now I've said that Mark DeRosa, I want to see him manage a baseball team. And everybody says, well, he's never done it. Now, again, I know him. I'll say it. I'm friends with him. But the conversations I've had with him, and I mean multiple conversations, lead me to believe that if you're looking for, and this is what I want a guy who knows the game is hard. He was a grinder. His whole career was a grind. But there wasn't a guy. He was hurt in San Francisco. Bochy wanted him back. He was hurt in Washington. Washington wanted him back. He knows John Hart. John Hart was the guy that signed him in Texas. He knew him at the MLB Network as well. That doesn't mean he's supposed to get the job. To me, it means he's supposed to be able to interview for the job. And knowing him, I'm telling you this. What would be different around here is the word unacceptable would be used out loud. It would be, this is not how we play baseball. We give away games. He's going to tell you that. I'd like some of that here. I would. You know, you want to have T-shirts. You've been in the clubhouse. Everybody, every team has, you know, party at Napoli's, suffer in silence, whatever. I know what some of the T-shirts would say here in Atlanta if Mark DeRosa was the manager. And it would be a hell of a lot more interesting than a lot of them in a lot of places because he doesn't suffer fools on top of everything else. Would he need a bench coach? Sure. And I don't know if you know this. Do you know he interviewed for the Miami Marlins job?
Oh, no.
Nobody knows it.
No.
Yeah, you know, they were honest with him. They said they wanted Mattingly, and they got Mattingly. But I talked to him the day he was going down to Florida, 6 hours later. He didn't have a bunch of books with him. He didn't have a whole bunch of, let me tell you about your double-A, your rookie ball team. He didn't do that because he thought that would have been, quite honestly, dishonest. It wouldn't have been who he is. He went down there to talk baseball and how he thinks you put 25 together and then how the people below that, the minor leagues need to be run, how your scouting has to be run. I'd like a different approach. I'd like a harder edge, a little bit harder nose approach around here. That's the direction I would go. You want Bud Black? He's done it before. Go ahead and introduce Bud Black. That's not how I would do it.
Yeah, and I guess,
would go after something different.
Yeah, and the thing with Bud Black is really, what has Bud Black done?
Right. Well, again, what he's done is he's filled out a lineup card a whole bunch of times. You know, he's filled out a lineup card. I that might mean something. I guess it does to some degree. But between you and me, I can pull a double switch. I honestly believe this. Now, people get mad. I'm not a radio host, and I'm on every day. I'm not a radio host that says, well, you know, I could do that. I'm not a really big fan of radio hosts to do that. But I can tell you what I can do. I can fill out a lineup card. I can pull a double switch. I could have my pitching coach pick up the phone and call the bullpen. And I'm not being smug about this, but if you've watched enough of these, you know that, let's see, there's only one first baseman. Don't put two in the lineup. You need nine guys. Make sure, count them up, there's nine. I don't think this is rocket science. I believe a bad manager loses you more games than a good manager wins you. So what's a bad manager? A bad manager is a guy who can't figure out how to, A, work his bullpen or have somebody there who can do it for him or with him. And the other part is that you're not putting guys in a position for success. Those are the things. And kicking the ass when it's needed, pat on the back when it's needed. It's psychology as much as it is, you know, managing, and I believe that 1,000%. If you have a hand, if you're a manager with some power, what your 25-man roster looks like, and there are some managers, you know this, there are some managers that have more say than others. Make sure you pick the right 25 guys if your GM is sitting down and asking you about that.
Well, I mean, do you think that the Braves, they're so, I mean, they've been so buttoned up for so long, and obviously DeRosa played here, and I'm sure that he's got ties with Bobby Cox and you said John Hart and all that group, but I mean, do you think they're ready to kind of,
I don't know,
rip away from the staid persona that they've had for so long?
Look, at a certain point, I like the people in this organization a lot. I want to see them win, and I mean people all over the place in this organization. You're not owed anything. And if you think that not stepping out, whether it's because it goes against your philosophy or there's a little bit of a fear factor, I don't know why you wouldn't step out. In a world of what have you done for me lately, what has not stepping out done for you?
Yeah, and it seems like of all times now would be the time to do it, going into a new stadium with really nothing to lose.
You know, there was a time, it was this spring, and I heard, well, look, we're going to, you know, I heard people whispering this, if not saying it out loud, you know what, we're going to go the Kansas City Royals route. Well, I went on the air the next day and said, that's insulting. Kansas City are the best bullpen and the best defense in baseball. You're not going to go that route. You're not. That's ridiculous. What you're saying is we're a team that's not going to hit a lot of home runs, therefore we'll go the Kansas City Royals route. Not a chance. You didn't have a bullpen and you don't play defense like them. So to say you're like them is sort of, you know, you're trying to play an okey-doke. Well, look, the Royals did it without a whole lot of money spent, without a whole lot of home runs. Okay, but they did two of the three things you need to do in baseball better than anybody. So you're not them. Like, I agree with you. If you're going to do... You work around people, and I said, you know, every once in a while, I'd like to see a guy get knocked on his ass. Why are these guys digging in? You got young pitchers. Why do guys own the plate? Are you afraid to throw inside? Are you afraid you're going to go down 1-0 in a count? I think teams are way too comfortable against this staff. I think they're too comfortable against this bullpen. I think these guys maybe offensively should be digging in a little bit more. And if somebody comes in after you, fantastic. Tell him you're going to kick his rear end. You know, walk out to the mound. I think some of that stuff is missing. And I don't mean headhunting. I'm not a fan of headhunting. I'm talking about getting the plate. And I'm talking about a player trying to get 2 more inches on the plate until somebody knocks you back. And if they hit you after you hit a home run, do something about it. I mean, that to me is what, like, visually, I think Nick Markakis is a tough guy. I do. I think he's a legitimate tough guy. He's not a vocal guy. Freddie Freeman's not a vocal guy. You need somebody here, maybe in the clubhouse, that does a little bit of something. But I'll tell you what, I know and you know that there are certain guys, whether it's this team over the years or any other team in baseball, if you bowed up to them, you know what they're going to do? They're going to bow up right back. Have you sensed there's been a lot of that around here lately?
No, not in a long time.
And so if you're asking me, should they step out of their comfort zone? Yeah, if for nothing else, I'd like to see a couple of those things happen. Why is Mike Fultonavich, you know, controllably wild? Why are you finding the middle of the plate and giving up home runs like that? Why is somebody actually comfortable enough to be that comfortable to swing that way against you? Knock somebody down. Matt Whistler, you're smart. You know what? Get some of the plate back. You want the outside? Go take it by pushing somebody back. You want a little bit more of a plate as an offensive guy? Step in until the guy does something about it. I don't want fighting just for the sense of fighting. I don't want a clown show. But I would like to see a little bit more of a, if it's swagger that leads to an actual result, I'll take that all day long around here. I hope it happens. I'm rooting for that as much as I'm rooting for anything else.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess the other team, there, you know, there's like the Royals and the Cubs. Well, the Cubs also have great offensive pieces, and they also have more money right than virtually any team in baseball, so you're not going to be them either. So.
Well, you aren't going to be them because the guys that they had in the wings waiting and a couple of the... Look, Theo Epstein, if the Cubs win a World Series this year, just put him in the Hall of Fame now. And I'm not trying to, like, I'm not into hyperbole, but the way they did it, you can tell me, well, look, how easy was it for Epstein? Well, it wasn't that easy. They made some trades. They drafted right. You know, they signed a couple of the right free agents. I think what they've done there is phenomenal. I think Theo Epstein hiring Joe Maddon puts another 2 notches on his belt to become a Hall of Fame executive at some point in his career, if not sooner. You don't have Chris Bryant. You don't have Rizzo. You don't have fill in the blank. You don't have an Arrieta. You don't have an Addison. You know, what don't you have? Well, you don't have those things. You honestly don't have those things. The Dexter Fowler thing, lucky or not. Look, Jason Hayward is the biggest blemish for the Cubs over the last 2 or 3 years. And that's just money. You know, yeah, it's a lot of money, but it's just a money problem at this point with him.
Right. Well, it's exciting, I guess is the word, looking forward here. There's so much anticipation at the end of the season to see where all of this goes and to see what the Braves do in the offseason. And I know you will be on top of it, and we hope that you'll be back with us to talk more about it going ahead, Chris. It's always great.
Yeah, this offseason, it's good. I don't know if it's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting, if nothing else. And I'm rooting like hell. Look, I work on the radio, but I haven't lost being a fan. I'm rooting like hell to have stuff turn around sooner instead of later here because I think the city wants it. I don't know if any fan base deserves it, what you deserve and what you don't deserve, but I think everybody here is starved to watch this team go out and win again, and maybe win in a style that you go, you know what? my guys are willing to do whatever it takes to win a game, let's go. I'll rally around behind that.
Yeah, I always said it doesn't really matter where you play. It's what's on the field. So, you know, if they go up to Cobb County and they stink it up again, people aren't going to show up to see them play there any more than...
Yeah, you got a one-year window. Look, I think we all think you got a one-year window to go get it right. I don't think 17 is going to be a wow year. But I think 17, you better come up with the answers about Swanson and Albies and who your pitchers are going to be and how much money you're going to put in a reserve to go buy free agency or make a trade at some point in 17 and take on money. I'm okay with that. I really am. I've lived without watching great baseball for a couple of few years. I can live with it for a little bit longer as long as I see the proverbial light at the end of the tunnel. And the light at the end of the tunnel is hard-nosed, edgier guys playing a hard-nosed, edgier version of baseball and accumulating more talent than you've had in the last few years. Let's do that, and let's have a good time running with it.
Well, we'll close it on that. Chris, thank you so much for your time. It was great talking
to you.
All
right, appreciate it. Yeah, listen, I always appreciate it.
Of course. I'll catch up with you soon.
Okay, thanks.
So you can hear Chris every weekday morning at 680thefan.com, as I mentioned, and of course follow him on Twitter, @ChrisDomino. It's always got some great baseball stuff on there. He's got a lot of contacts, and he's around the team a lot, so it's a great follow. So I will be back to check in on our Shots in the Dark and, of course, the week ahead after a quick break. So let's check in on our favorite segment, of course, our wild predictions for the week, the Shots in the Dark. First up is our listener pick from Taylor Enochson, who predicted that Dansby would have a hit in every game he played this week. And Taylor, you were pretty close. Dansby played in all four in Arizona and the first two in San Francisco and went hitless in only one game. And that was the Wednesday game where he went 0-for-1. So, you know, if I were Ham, I would say if you had only said every game he started, because we know how sticky he is with particulars. But great try, Taylor. Great submission. Keep him coming. So now on to our picks. I come in leading August 2-0 over Ham and Steve, so this is really for pride, but let's take a look. Ham predicted that the Braves would score three times as many runs in Arizona as they would in San Francisco. Well, the Braves lit up Arizona for 27 runs over four games. The bats cooled, as they often do in San Francisco, and the Braves were held to 7 runs over the three games there. So according to my math, which was never very good, the Braves did indeed score more than three times the runs in Arizona as they did in San Francisco, because 7 times 3 is 21, and 27 is more than 21. So nice job, Ham. On to Steve, who predicted that Dansby would have 3 or more extra base hits this week. He had none. I predicted that the starting pitchers would pitch fewer than a combined 35 innings this week. And, of course, we talked about the fine starts from Whistler and Folty, so I didn't even bother looking it up. I knew I was wrong. So congrats to Ham as he picks up the win this week. That concludes August with 2 wins for me, 1 win for Ham, and 0 wins for Steve. So let's look ahead to the coming week. Ham, jumping on the Freddie Freeman train, he predicts that Freddie will have 3 homers and match that with 8 Ks. Steve predicts that Tehran bounces back in a big way, goes 8 1/3 with 0 earned runs in his next start. I like Markakis this week. I think he bats over 300 with 5 extra base hits. So remember to get your Shots in the Dark in for the coming week on Facebook, which we never really check, or Twitter, which we always check. ABTSITD, of course, is the hashtag. And if we pick it, we will discuss it on next week's show. First game this week is on Tuesday. And for that week, on to the schedule for this week. 3 at home with the Padres, and then the Braves are back on the road with 3 at Philadelphia. Lots of road trips coming up for the Braves. Tuesday, we get Whistler looking to build on his great start, matching up with Edwin Jackson, who is 3-4 with a 5.71 ERA. Wednesday is Tehran looking to, of course, to get back on track against Christian Friedrich, sporting a Tehran-like 4-10 record and a 4.89 ERA. Thursday sees Folty matched up with Paul Clemens and his 5.06 ERA. Padres really bringing some great pitching to town. Not. On to Philly, where game one is Gant versus Jeremy Hellickson and his 3.80 ERA. Then Blair gets another start, surprisingly, if you ask me, against Vince Velasquez and his 4.21 ERA. Finally, Whistler's second start of the week against Jake Thompson and his nightmarish 9.78 ERA. So, of course, he will be the one that throws eight innings of shutout baseball against the Braves on whatever day that is, Sunday. So Steve, looking ahead for the week, is back on the bandwagon, likes the Braves for a 4-2 week. Don't know how he breaks that down. He didn't tell me. Oh, well, I guess it's 2-1, 2-1. Ham continues to hate the Braves and has them going 2-4. And I am sticking with my general sense of malaise and see it as a 3-3 week. So that is the Kurt Show, folks. Please remember to find us at our new home of Blog Talk Radio, as well as on iTunes and Stitcher. You can always find us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com to access our shows, check out our blogs, and to post in our comments section. Of course, be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, fans, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com. Had to admit